All right. So this week is not the last one. I will give a shiur next week. I might have to finish a drop early because my daughter has like a whatever end of the year, but it's okay. But we'll still be here. Mirtz Hashem. So for our second to last shiur, we are moving on in Parshas Mishpatim. And last week we saw how one pasuk had so much, and there's still more, which we didn't cover, obviously.
Can I switch off the acorn?
You definitely can.
Anybody want the acorn?
No.
Cold, beautiful. Air conditioner on.
Oy, different cities. I mean, today we're similar cities. I'm not thinking it's different parts of the world. You know, she lives on the equator.
It's incredible. I think this is where we see how different, you know, people literally in the same exact situation,
yes. Yes.
And they feel it so differently. It's
a
unreal.
World.
It's just,
it's a different world.
It's amazing. It is. It really is. So. All right. Okay, so last week, as we said, we're moving on from Parshas Mishpatim, from the Pasuk. So last week we spoke about how Mishpatim is like the general sort of introduction to the whole Parsha, talking about the laws, which makes sense. This follows from Matan Torah. There was one more thing. Yes, I just wanted to share one thing. We'll just do this one orally. The Al-Sheikh, he says very beautifully that the Pasuk says, Ve'ela ha-Mishpatim, these are the laws, asher tosim lifneihem, right, that you shall put place before them. And he says something very interesting, that generally speaking, if you look at laws of other nations or just general laws, many times when you look at them in isolation, they look fine. But once you group them together, you see they don't really make sense. And he gave an example. For example, some countries, even till today, have where if you kill somebody, you get the death sentence. If you steal something, you also get the death sentence. Okay, something like that, or something similar in the harshness. So he says, if you look at it separately, maybe you don't see how terribly unjust it is. But once you group the laws together, then you see how it just doesn't make any sense. So he says, Torah is exactly the opposite. The more you group it together, the more you see the logic and the justice that lies behind it. Because the famous pasuk in Talmud says, Mishpatei Hashem emes, the judgments of God are truth. Tzadku yachdav, everybody who is affected by it is equally justifiably judged. So one big example that's given for this is a very interesting thing. It says that if you go into, well, I mean, really God can only do this. But let's say, for example, if you have a court case and somebody's committed a terrible crime. Now, they have to follow the law of the land. And let's say they're put into prison for I don't know how many years. What about the poor family who hasn't done anything wrong? They're suffering because of this person who did something wrong. Now, that's human beings, we can't help that. Hashem, obviously, we say is different. In the extreme, Hashem can, we don't see it always, but Hashem judges every person, not in isolation, but rather as far as also everybody that's affected and everything that's affected. Now, with Torah laws, though, Torah laws is given to man, so we don't necessarily see it that way. But the Al-Sheikh says, if you look into Mishpatim, you'll see how every law is so just. For example, he says, if somebody kills, well, on, you know, if it's a real murder, premeditated, they're put to death. But if you steal, what happens to you if you steal? You have to replace that which you have stolen. But not only do you replace that which you have stolen, but you also have to pay back double. What's the idea of double? Because you wanted to make the other person have a loss, so you should lose what you wanted him to lose, so to speak. So you can see that everything is logical in that way, especially, as he says, when you group them. And that's, the Al-Sheikh says, that's like why this pasuk is an introduction to understanding that it's not just these laws, because we're going to see it. Today we won't see it, but when we move on, we'll see that some of the laws in Mishpatim, literally one pasuk, and it's each like pasuk is a whole different topic. I mean, there's so much involved, but the Chumash only gives one pasuk, and it goes jumps from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, and sometimes doesn't even look connected. But he says they're all there together on purpose and to help us understand the justice of Hashem. Okay, let's go on now and let's see the first first law in Parshas Mishpatim. So what is the first thing that Parshas Mishpatim deals with? As we said, I don't remember if we read the psukim, but very quickly we'll read it again if we did. The first psukim, it's on page 248 of your copies. The first thing that the Torah chooses to deal with, of all things, seems something totally irrelevant to us. The truth is we cannot keep this mitzvah nowadays. It's not to be kept. Melanie, there is sheets. Come, do you want to take, please? Sorry, take. There's plenty. You know what? I'll give you here. Here. Oh, you have an extra one. Okay. So it says like this, that these are the laws of what we call the Eved Ivri. And let's see what an Eved Ivri is. We don't have it nowadays. And for us, it's also very foreign in our, you know, culture, so to speak, and in the way we're brought up. And we'll have to understand what is the significance for us if we don't have any more slaves. What does this mean? Okay, so let's see what it is. So some woman would argue that it means a slave. Some women will say it's not true, it still exists, but let's see. Kisikna evidivri. If you buy, as they say, when you will buy, here they translate a Hebrew servant. So we'll see soon what does that mean. And then we go to the next page. What happens to the Hebrew servant that you buy? On page 250, Sheishonim Yavaid, for 6 years he shall work, Uvashviis Yetze Lechavshi Chinam. And in the seventh year he shall go to freedom without any charge. Okay, we'll see what that means. And let's go to another. So right away we see that you can buy a slave. He can be Jewish, you can already see, right, that you can buy a Jewish slave. He works for you for 6 years, and in the seventh year, he has to go free. Okay, that's what we already see from the Pasuk. Let's see in Pasuk Gimel, another halacha. Im begapa yavai, if he shall come, and they translate, gapa is like from the word, it's interesting what the word gapa means. In Rashi, he says, like knuffa, like his cloak. It means alone. If he comes just with what he's wearing, so to speak, and what that means is he's not married. So if he comes alone, begapa yetze, then he goes out alone. Im bal ishahu, if he is the husband of a woman, then what happens? V'yotza ishta imay, his wife shall go out with him. But what does that mean? Did you buy him, you got his wife also? How does that work? To understand. What does it mean? Let's see one more pasuk, or actually two more. Im adonav yiten loy. Okay, so it's on the next, it's back, it's on page 251. Yiten loy isha. If his master will give him a woman, and we'll see Rashi will tell us this will be a non-Jewish woman, v'yolda loy vanim, and she will give birth to him, sons, oibanes, or daughters, ha'isha v'yiladeha t'yeladeineha, so the woman and her children remain with the master, v'hu yetze begapay, and he goes out alone, just as he has come in. Okay, so this is a Jewish slave, and the master, the Jewish master is permitted to give him a non-Jewish woman, who he lives with and has children, and then he gets to keep those children. Okay, we'll discuss in a minute. And the next pasuk is, what happens? V'im amar yoymar ha'eved ahafti es adoini es ishti ve'es banai loy etzei chafshi. But what happens if this slave, or we call him a servant, let's say, says, but I love her, right? I've been with her already for 6 years. I really love her and I love my children. I don't want to leave her behind. So it actually says, okay, he has the choice. He won't go out free. But how long can he stay with his master? And then there's one little stipulation before that. What must you do? V'higishay adonav el ha'eleikim. His master shall bring him to the judges. Eleikim, remember we said at the beginning, is another word for judges. And v'higishay el hadeles ayel ha'mezuzah. As we know, we take him into the doorway. And what do we do with him in the doorway? It's a very interesting thing. That's on your next page. And, yeah, what do you do? That's right, you pierce his ear. Exactly right. Okay, let's see. It's on page 252. V'rotza adayinav es aznav, and his master shall bore through his ear, b'martzeya, with this, whatever this thing, that the tool that they use, v'avdai la'aylam, and he shall serve him forever. That's the end of the section. Now, la'aylam, just to be very clear, is not forever. No Jew remains a servant or a slave forever. It's only up until what we call the year of Yovel, which is the Jubilee year, the 50th year, which doesn't mean he's a slave for 50 years. It just depends what, because because it's every 50 years. So if he became, if this happened in the 42nd year of the cycle, he'll only be there for 8 years. If he happens to be that he does it at the beginning of the cycle, well, then it can be that it will be for a very, very long time. But it's until the Jubilee year, he's permitted to stay with his master and remain with that non-Jewish woman and his children. Okay, this is the basic thing. What's going on here? There's a lot to understand. We want to see layer to understand. Okay, firstly, just the pshat, a few Rashis, just to see what the psukim meant. So I just want to do a few of the Rashis. Sorry, so we'll go back to page 249, right? So it's back to 249. I wanted to show you something where it says, Kisikne Evet Ivri, when you shall buy a Hebrew servant. Now Rashi makes sure we understand what are we talking about. How do we know, and what is it? So he says, Eved Shehu Ivri. This is a servant who is a Jew. Yes, it is not a non-Jewish servant. In other words, it's not a servant to a Jew. The servant himself is a Jew. Because, I just want to clarify, there really are three categories of slavery, if you want to say. I don't know the right word to use. But there is something called a Eved Knani, a non-Jewish slave, that's true, that you can actually acquire. Then there is the Jewish servant. And then there's something which we call, and we're going to do it next week maybe, Amma Ivriya, the Jewish maidservant, right? So there's three categories, different laws apply to each one. And obviously not only laws how to treat them, but also how long they stay and all the different things. So this is talking about, interestingly, the second category. The other ones are spoken in another, well, the Amma Ivriya will be after this, but the Eved Knanis is in Vayikra and Dvarim. It's in a different place. It's not mentioned here. The non-Jewish servant and slave, that's a whole different halacha. Here we're dealing with the Jewish slave. Now, how does he become a slave? So look at the next Rashi, Ki Sikne. Do you see? It's still on that same page 249, more towards the bottom. How do you say Ki Sikne? Miyad Beistin. So where do you buy it from? You buy it from the hand of the court. How would that happen? So it says, Shemacharuhu Bignevasai. Why were the court selling this Jew? Because he unfortunately stole, and he says, "Kamoshen Emer im ein lei v'nimkar b'gnevasai." He doesn't have money to pay for that which he has stolen. He will be sold for his theft, which means not only doesn't he have money to pay back double. We're not even talking. We're talking about the thing itself. So he stole. He used it, wasted it, whatever. And now, see, do you see? It's page 249. Lei. I know. Sorry, because it's two-sided, it's a bit confusing, yeah, to the bottom. So because of that, because he's stolen, he doesn't have money, so what the Beis Din does is takes this person, sells him, and this way, the money goes back to the one he stole from, and he remains a slave for 6 years, and then he can go free. Okay, we're going to discuss soon his conditions and everything. Very interesting. There is another case, and that's not what we're talking about here, it's very interesting, where you can have somebody who can actually sell themselves. There is a concept that if somebody is so poor, they have nothing, and they have nothing to feed themselves or their children or their wife, they are permitted to sell themselves. They become part of another household, serve their master. So it's interesting because it almost sounds like he's hiring himself out to work, but it is different. It's still different. He's bound. He can't leave for 6 years, so to speak. He's bound to his master. And then the master is required to give him his food and his lodging, as well as, we'll see, for his wife and children as well. So that was one way that they were able to alleviate that terrible poverty, should they be in that condition. But here we're not talking about that. Here the psukim are specifically talking about a case of somebody stole, exactly. And then you had to sell him, and then that's how it got paid back. Now, very interesting, because we can't relate to this at all, but we relate to something which, I don't know why, it's just, I think that's maybe because it's not in our world, a little bit, even though it's like, you know, you say you live, you know, two people can live right near each other, and one's living in the South Pole, and one's living on the equator. The truth is, in a place, I'll tell you what you find this with lots of things, but I think this is one area that it's so black and white. We live in a city, right? So let's say a while ago I was driving down, you know, when you drive down Anzac Parade and you pass the Long Bay Jail, right? So you pass the jail. So we just pass, we don't look, we don't think, we don't want to think, right? Because it's painful. But people sit in prisons. I mean, here it's not even nearly as bad as in the United States. In the United States, there's a population, I don't even know how many millions of people, literally live in prison from when they're young till the day they die, actually. It is a sick way of living. There is no rehabilitation. It's not possible after a while. Torah has such, there's no prison in Torah. It doesn't exist. Now, this person stole, right? In our society, if you're caught doing fraud or stealing, yeah, you can serve a prison sentence, for sure, no question about it. We'll see soon, it's a very fascinating, everybody laughs, says, oh, Torah is so archaic, so cruel, slavery. It's not slavery. We'll see what kind of slavery this is. If you imagine somebody going into a healthy, functional home, right? What happens, and obviously the home that he's being bought is a home that knows how to deal financially with their finances in a proper way. I'm not saying, not judging anybody. I'm saying some people unfortunately are in terrible situations, but I'm saying just generally he's being brought into a home where the people, by mazel, are able to, right, and have the right way. What happens? He sees how his master lives. He sees how the family lives. He will see he's treated quite well, very well. What happens when he leaves? What we're hoping is that he will want to set up a home the way he was living for the past 6 years. It's a whole different method than what we have now, and definitely a million times better. Okay, but let's see anyways. Let's see. We'll see it soon, how it's discussed. But let's understand just one more thing. Let's go a little bit more into the details before we go more into the meaning of it. I just want to see.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they did, right? Now, not these kind of things. These kind of things you wouldn't. It's a bit complicated. There is Jewish Beis Din, but if you would do a real stealing, it would be, they have to, like I say, Dina de Malchusa, Dina, the law of the land is the law, so it's a bit of a, yeah. Depends on which issue it is that you go to a Jewish Beis Din and which one not. But let's just see what in Begapa. We said if he comes in alone. So he says, what is alone, Rashi? So now we're on page 250. So Rashi says, Shalai haya nasa isha. Alone means that he wasn't married to a woman. Then, which means, as we say, im bilchudahi, he comes in on his own. And the language that's used is, as he says, of Lashon Begapai, Biknafai, with his coattail, as you say, Shalai ba elokamayshu, he came as he is, Yechidi, on his own, and then he leaves on his own. That's what he says. Very interesting thing, which means that if a man comes in single, if you buy a single, something also that's hard for us to understand, but it's a different way of thinking. If you buy a man that's single, that he's stolen, you cannot give him a non-Jewish woman to live with. Only if he's already married can you give him a non-Jew, and it sounds so strange to us, we would think the other way around. Part of the reason is because the Torah hopes that he will not find any emotional attachment to this woman that he has been given. It's purely for the master to have, that they should have children, and the children will remain with the master. If you have a wife, the hope is that you will not make an emotional attachment with this other woman. But if this person doesn't have a wife, there's much more of a chance that he will become attached. So therefore, if he's single, he leaves single. He's not able to be given a woman while he is there. Then he says, I just want to see. Oh, I want to show you something. The bottom Rashi. This is very interesting. This already will give us a little bit of an insight into how different Torah looks at everything. V'yotza ishtayima. You see where it says his wife shall go out with him. The bottom part. Very interesting thing. So the question is, v'chimi hichnisa shateitze. Who brought her in that she has to leave? She wasn't bought. What does that mean? So the pasuk is telling us somebody who buys a Hebrew servant, it's quite a big investment you're making for this person. You have to pay not only for his food and lodging, but for the wife and for the children. So you have quite a big burden on your hands. And we'll see soon, the Rambam will tell us what kind of food you have to give them. Okay, you could think you could just give them the basics. Let's see. I want to show you, go to page 251 just to do one or two Rashis here. Let's see, okay. Okay, you know, we won't do the Rashis on this page. If you go to your other page, 252. Let's see the Rashi I want to do here. Remember we said that you bore, I just want to quickly see, bore through his ear. What ear? So which ear do you see where it says? Hayaminis, the right ear. Okay, so he says maybe the left ear. How do we know that it's the right here? So Talmud Leimar, Oizen, Oizen, L'Gzeira Shava. This is one way we learn. You know, L'Gzeira Shava means if you have the same word in two different verses, then you can see that what is applied in one of the psukim applies in the other pasuk by the same word, so to speak. Which means over here, you say, I'll tell you what he's saying over here. Over here he says, V'nem nemar kan v'rotza adayna v'saznai. Here it says his master shall bore through his ear. V'nemar b'mitzayra, when it talks about a mitzayra, somebody who has leprosy, it says, T'naych oizen ha-mitaher ha-yimonis. On the middle of the right ear of the one who is to be purified. So it uses the word oizen. Has nothing to do with this topic, but and there it means a right ear. So over here it also means a right ear. It's just showing us that it's the right ear. Why? We'll, I don't know. We'll see. Okay. Then he says, "I want to show you something." Now we really come to the important part of Rashi. Why do we do this? What's the idea if he wants to extend his stay? Why do you have to bore into his ear? What does it have to do with anything? So he says, "Mara izen leirotza." So what is it about the ear that it should be bored? Mikol shar evarim shabeguf, more than all the other organs of the body. So Amar Rabbi Yechonah ben Zakkai. So what does Rabbi Yechonah ben Zakkai say? Oizen zeis, this ear. Sheshamal har Sinai loy signa, that heard on har Sinai that you shouldn't steal. And what did it do? V'holach v'gonav, and it went and it stole. Tiratza, let it be bored. Okay, so it's the ear. The ear is what should be listening. We sometimes think of the eyes that see. But in Torah, there's a concept of listening, which is very important. Listening means internalizing. That's what it means. You have to listen and internalize. He didn't. Well, now we'll make a mark on his ear so he will remember that he made a very big mistake and he didn't listen up until now. And then he says an interesting thing. What about the person who didn't steal? What about the person who sold himself? So what? Why do you bore his ear? So we say, what did the ear hear? The ear heard that Hashem said that the children of Israel shall be slaves to me. And he went and acquired a different master for himself. Tiratza, then he shall also be bored. Very interesting. It's not a positive thing for a person to sell themselves. Obviously, a person would do it out of desperation. But what we hope is that they use everything possible before they do that. Because when you are a slave, even though you are always, Hashem is always your master, nevertheless, you're still not in control of your time. And you're still not in control of a lot of things. And therefore, you will not be able to serve Hashem properly. There's no question about it. Not the same way as if you are a free person. Okay, so this we see one of the reasons. But then he says another interesting thing. Why by the door? Says Rabbi Shimon, Hayadayresh Mikrozeh Kimin Chaymer. So the Rabbi Shimon says, like, it's like, it's interesting, as he says, and as pleasingly as a packet of pearls. What does that mean? Like, why are we specifically choosing that we should do it by the doorway and by the mezuzah? So it says, which is the side of the door. So he says, then all the other parts of the house. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the door and the doorpost that were witnesses in Egypt. When I skipped over the lintel and over the doorpost, right? And what did we say? That Bnei Yisrael, what happened to them? They were, that's when Hashem was coming and he skipped over the Egyptians and he went to the Jews. And what did he say? I'm going to take, redeem the Jewish people. And this person wants to be a slave again? I redeemed them from slavery and he's choosing to be a slave again? I had to do such miracles to release him from slavery. So as we can see, this is a terrible thing. That's why he should be bored in the presence of the, that's where he should, you know, by the doorpost. And quickly.
That's not his fault if he come back.
I know. So that's true. You're 100% right, Rivas. You know, we'll discuss it soon. We'll see a little bit more about it soon. Because here, really, we're talking more about the person who stole. Okay, so stealing is never really an option, as we know. In Torah, we have many, many ways of borrowing money for no interest. And we have tzedakah. And we have a lot of different things that are put into our society that a person really shouldn't have to steal. That's really a naya. But you're right. If somebody is unfortunately so poverty-stricken, so that's its own, it's really, because it's really in a different part of Chumash, its own discussion, how a person gets to that state and what really they should do. So the truth is, a Jew should really try, I mean, obviously they would, but try everything. Some people say that this is an easy way out almost, where he's shirking a little bit of responsibility. Being a slave is where you put yourself into, where somebody else will tell you, get up, what time to get up in the morning, what time to go to sleep, exactly what to do. And it's a bit of a sign of a person who doesn't want to take responsibility. And that's really not a positive thing. Yeah, it's not an ideal state of being at all. Again, not judging. Obviously, some people are unfortunately maybe emotionally so broken, they don't feel they have a choice, but he should always remember that's not really where he should be.
Even today, with the junior young people, they have rehab.
Yeah, well, you hope.
Teach them.
I hope.
So they have
broken homes. Yeah. Yeah, it's not simple.
Doing this because they are so poor. They are doing this because of jealousy.
Unfortunate, sometimes. Sometimes. Everybody has their own motivation. Sometimes it's just because that's what everybody else around them is doing. Yeah, unfortunate, as we know. It's a terrible thing, but yeah. It's a terrible cycle, as we say.
Yeah,
just want to show you one more thing, and then we're going to see more in depth. V'avada l'olam, that he, as we said, serves him forever. So make sure we realize it is only until the yovel, right? As Rashi tells us, it only goes up until the jubilee year. Then everybody goes free in the jubilee year. That's the Torah way. There's no way possible that a person can be a slave for longer than that. That never happens. Now I just wanted to tell you two beautiful things that I'm going to give you some copies inside. Okay, to see a little bit more about all the different beautiful things here. Let me just see something. Okay. See, there was one very nice thing. So the Zayar says something interesting. It says, like, we're talking about, like, how negative it is in a sense, and how come he says, like, he's, the Pasuk says in the seventh year he goes free, and up until then he's like a slave, which means he can't even serve Hashem properly. So he says that a servant who is subservient to a human master cannot serve Hashem adequately, for he cannot truly serve two masters. And by choosing a human master, he has taken a step towards liberating himself from his heavenly master, that is, from Ol Malchus Shamayim. He has spent his years in an empty existence that is empty of mitzvahs. Okay, so that's why when he's free, he comes closer to Hashem. That's the idea. That's what it says. Just wanted to see one thing. Oh, another very beautiful thing, that the word mezuzah apparently has the same gematria as the name of Hashem, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, which is 65. Again, that's why it says about a mezuzah, that's where he bores it, to remember who his real master is, that it is Hashem, that it is his real master. Okay, I'm going to see if there was something else, but...
It says also in 253,
very good, very powerful thing. Yeah, so we're going to see in another Mifra, excellent, yes, he does. It's a very important thing. We are really just slaves to Hashem and not slaves to somebody else who is really a slave, because we're all servants of Hashem. So if you have a servant, that means you're a servant to a servant, and a Jew is not a servant to a servant. A Jew is a servant only to Hashem. I want to show you one last beautiful thing before we look inside, and a lot of Mefarshim, just orally. So it's a very beautiful thing. When we talk about, why is it, if it's only till the year of the Yovel, so why doesn't the Torah just say till the 50th year, Yovel? Why does it use the word La'olam, forever? So it's a very beautiful message. And I was just saying, who says it? Oh, it doesn't say who says it. But I'll tell you, it's such a beautiful, beautiful message. It says like this, that even forever has a limit. When a person is in a state of misery, it feels like forever. That's the way it is. But even forever is limited. A Jew has to know that there really is no forever in misery. That's the way it works. In as he says, there's an end to the darkness. And that's why he uses that word, and because ultimately he will be returned to his family and he will be free. Okay, so it's just an important message for us that there's really, everything has an end, so to speak, in that way. Not today. No. Today you don't. No. Definitely not today. Oh, I'm sorry. There's one more thing orally. I didn't make a copy of this one. The Ramban. The Ramban asks the big question that we're going to see also other ways to answer. Why is this the first law chosen? The big question of all the things. Why do we choose Evan Ivry? So he says a very beautiful thing. I'll just read you one or two of the lines. So he says, because the reason that he chooses Evan Ivry is because when we send out the slave in the seventh year, it's a zecher li'itzias Mitzrayim. It's a remembrance to the fact that we were slaves and then we were released from Egypt, which was mentioned in the first of the Aseres HaDibros. So it corresponds to that idea that we should always remember that there was a time that we were slaves and yet we went free. This will bring that memory very real to us. That's why it's the first mitzvah chosen, the Ramban says, and also because it's such a fundamental thing, he says, it actually remembers the creation of the world. Again, because 6 and 7. So 6 days Hashem created the world, 7th day free. 6 years you work, 7th year you're free. So again, a very fundamental concept in our for us to remember. And then let's just see. And then also he says a beautiful thing, that the idea of the Yovel, which as we say is the 50th year. So this is the concept, as he says at the beginning, because really after Yovel is after 7 cycles, right? So we know that there's a concept that after 6,000 years, there will be the 7,000th year, which will be the time of Mashiach, right? So he says this also brings home to us that ultimately the whole world will be free, no question, and the world will be run with godliness revealed. So again, it's just that message, bringing that message very, very strongly home to us. And one more thing of that, the Ar HaChaim says, why is it called Ivri? You know, we say Eved Ivri, a Jewish slave, but a Jew is not called an Ivri. Only Avraham was called an Ivri, but we don't find that word used anywhere else. What does the word Ivri mean? So do you remember when right? It's interesting. Ivri means like me'eva, from across, right? So somebody who's separate. So Avraham was called that because he was different to everybody around him, right? He was on one side and everybody else was on the other side. So the Ar HaChaim says that a Jew has to remember that there's never really, a Jew is never really a slave. When you say Eved Ivri, it brings home to us that Ivri means transient. It means something that passes. That's what La'aver, to pass, to cross over. It is a stage which you just have to go through temporarily, transient, and then you'll come to the true stage, which is one of freedom. So a Jew is really never a servant. Temporary, only a temporary condition, unfortunately, which can happen sometimes. Okay, so now we'll look, I want to show you something really nice. Let's see which one. Let's see here. Because I'll give out 2 booklets. Let's see, I'll do, this one is just nice in English. I think we have, that's not booklets here. So we can give this paper out, and then I'll give you this. There. And you know, Rona, you can take and pass down this one also. And we'll... Okay, I want to show you something now. Now, just to understand, before we get to the more depth, we'll do it, in, as we see, in layers. We'll hopefully get to more and more depth. Okay, we'll do the English one after. I just want to do the Rambam first, yeah. The pages that have Rambam, that have number 1, do you see there's a number 1 on the page, yeah? So let's just look at this. I want to show you something nice, just to get it. This is called Hilchas Avadim. The laws of slavery, Rambam has laws of slavery. There's 2 things, right? 1 English and 1... Yeah. Okay. So in the Rambam Hilchas Avadim, you see Halacha Vav, Kol Eved Ivri. Do you see that one? We'll do the Hebrew one first. Yeah. Okay. The one that says page 1, right? See? Page 1. Okay. It says Kol Eved. So it has a little circle, Halacha Vav. See on the bottom. Okay. Kol Eved Ivri. Every Jewish slave. Osur La'avoid by Bifarach. You cannot enslave him for nothing. What do we mean for nothing? Meaning meaningless work. Let's see what it means. Amazing. The Ezihi Avaidas Perach. How do you translate Avaidas Perach? Like we had in Mitzrayim. So he says, Zoi Avaida She'ein La Kitzva. A work which has no end, and a work which means that there's no measure to it. The Avaida She'einai Tzarech La. And work that is unnecessary. You know, I think in school sometimes we do that to children. What do they call it? The meaningless work? It's not allowed. So if you tell somebody to do something and it doesn't have an end, I'll give you an example, and there's no purpose, this is not allowed. This is not allowed even to somebody you buy, never mind to somebody who's just coming in for working for you. Let's see what he says. Ela tiyeh machshavtoi la'avidoi bilvad shelo yibatel. Why would he want to do it? Maybe your intention is that this is you're not allowed to do, that you should just make him work so that he shouldn't be doing nothing, right? So you think, not good for the person to be doing nothing. I'll make him do something, even though I don't need that something. So he gives examples. Mikan amru chachamim. So from here the chachamim say, shelo yomer, like we shouldn't say to him, adar, tachas hagfanim, that you should dig underneath these trees, whatever, underneath these vines. What?
Vine,
right? Atchavay, until I come. Just keep digging until I come. No, that's not the way. You can't do that. Shaharei leinasan lekitzva. You didn't tell him how much to dig, and you didn't tell him when you're coming, right? You can't do that. He has no idea. You come in 3 days, you come in an hour. He has no clue. That you can't do. That's considered like a torturous kind of way of treating somebody, okay? As we know that that's how it is. When we have a job, we like to know how we finish it, whether it be time or whether it be what we're doing, right? And he says, also, but rather, what should you do? You know, dig until this hour, until this place, this amount. V'chein, lo yaymala, you cannot say to him, chafar makim zeh, v'hu eina tzarech lai, dig this, and you don't need it at all. Like the next day you'll tell him to fill it up, yeah? Whatever, we know, unfortunately, this is the torture. The Nazis, they've done it, they did it, that's exactly what they did. And the Mitzrayim, they did that. V'afilu lahachim leikais shel chamin, even if you ask him to warm up a cup, like, you know, you want a cup of tea, so to speak, you say, warm up the water. But you're not interested in it. You don't want to drink it. You just want him to do something. Go warm up the cup of water. No, not allowed. Or make something cold. Not allowed, unless you need it. Then you are doing something forbidden and you're transgressing a loisase, right? A negative commandment. That you should not rule over him. Bifarach. That's what we said, like mamish in this torturous way. You can only ask him to do something which has a measurement and that you need. And this is also interesting, he says, okay, so this is a halacha that if you have a non-Jewish slave, which is its own halachas, but even him, if you see somebody else that has a non-Jewish slave and you see that they're mistreating, you have to do something about it. You cannot stand back and just allow that to happen. It's very interesting. Okay, let's go now on the next page, page 2. Let's see another halacha, how it describes. Tess, halacha tess. Kol eved ivri, oy ama ivriya. So every man servant or a woman, as we said, is a maid servant. Chayev ha'adayin lahashvaysam. Now this is really strong. The master has to equal him in what? He has to be equal b'maychel, in his food, u'b'mashke, and in his drink, b'chsus, in his clothing, u'b'madayr, and where he lives, okay? You can't give him the colder room, the worse room, you can't give him less inferior quality food, not allowed. Very interesting halachas. Shenemar ki toiv loy imach, right? It's good for him with you. Shall
I buy mink coat? I have to buy
yep. The yeah, I don't know. Well, if it's cold outside. I don't know if it's a luxury item. So to be honest, it's interesting all these halachas. I don't know exactly the ramifications. If it's something which is totally not a necessity, right? It could be more that if you buy something warm for yourself, you have to buy something warm for them as well. Maybe if it's a luxury, like if you buy a piece of jewelry, you don't have to buy it for your slave as well, right? A mink coat is more of a status kind of a thing. It would be in a different category.
Okay.
Yeah. But still, if somebody's going to go into, I don't know, Target or I don't know what other nice store there is, then they have to go to the nice store for the slave too if they're going to buy the raincoat that's going to protect them more. You can't do it. You know, you can't just, yeah. Okay, let's see. He says, and he gives examples. The example he gives, Shaloi Sehe, Ata Eichel Pas Noki, Vuhu Eichel Pas Kibar. So nowadays, different. In those days, what was considered good was like the fine flour that was, how do you say, without any pieces. Now, you know, if you have whole grain, it's considered more healthy. But in those days, let's say the fine flour, the refined flour was the more, you know, for the rich people. So you can't eat that and give him the unrefined. No, not allowed. Ata shoyse yayin yashan, you can't drink old wine. And who shoyse yayin chadash, and give him new wine. Okay, it's interesting. Ata yashan al gabe meichin, you can't sleep like on a feather bed and he should sleep on straw, not allowed. Ata dar bikrach, v'hu dar bikvar. You want to live in the city and he'll live in the village, or the other way around. Whichever one you prefer, that you think is better, can't do it to him. He's got to live with you, as he says. Oy ata dar bikvar, v'hu yoshev bikrach. Which some people have different, you know, which is better. Shenemar v'yotza me'imach, that he will go out from you. In other words, mikan amru kolakain, and this is a very famous line. Anybody who acquires Eved Ivri Kekaine Adain La'atzmai. It's like you're buying a master for yourself. Now we understand a little more what Torah means. Okay, so it's not the Eved that we would say when we read about in the books, you know, the slavery in Africa, the slavery in America. This is a whole different thing. This is not that slavery. This is really what we might call a hired worker, and the hired worker that we have to treat with such dignity and such incredible care, it's a whole different world. It's still not ideal, as we see, definitely. But it's still very different, very uninteresting. And as he says, v'chayav linhag by minag achva. And now, all this is fine. You might give him the old wine, but you might talk down to him. No, you can't. You have to treat him like a brother. As he says, with care, you know, treat him equal. Sheneemar u'ba'acheichem b'nei Yisrael, because he is your brother, he's your Jewish brother. And he says, nevertheless, something interesting. This is how the master treats the slave. Afal pi kein tzarech ha'eved linhag ba'atzmai minhag avdus. But the slave should actually act like a slave. In other words, he should respect his master. So you see, there's different halachas for the different people. The slave has to realize he has to work for his master, and perhaps he has to make himself a little bit humble in front of his master, but his master has to treat him like an equal. And any of the work that he does for him. Okay, that's all I want to do from the Rambam. Let's see now. It's actually quite incredible, these halachas. I want to show you something, because I don't know if we'll have time. So I want to just show you, let's see what page it is, in your booklets. Let's look at the other booklet for a minute just to see. This is just from the Midrash. Says it's just very nice. It shows you all the different laws. Some of it we've just done. I want to see something on page 1 in this. Oh, I see. So I feel bad. I don't know why I made that first. Do you have page 204? Yeah. Okay, good. So look at this. Some of the Torah laws concerning a Hebrew slave. Look, he says, here he goes even more specific. These are things from the Gemara and from other places. Forbidden to give him lowly jobs. You see, hey, it says page, it's this booklet. The other booklet that you had, I'm sorry for being confusing. Yeah, it's only one page? Okay, good. Sorry. Okay, because I did it back to front. Yes. Okay, so he says, forbidden to give him lowly jobs to do, such as washing his master's feet or putting on his master's shoes, even if these same jobs would willingly be performed by his son for his father or by a student for his teacher. Very interesting. The master must share with his slave whatever food, as we said. We said that, right? And if the master, and the third one, what happens if he only has one good loaf of bread or one cup of good wine? He has to give it to his slave. If there's only one pillow, the master has to give it to his slave and sleep on the ground himself. And if the slave had a certain profession before he entered his service, it is forbidden to ask of him to do any type of labor other than that which he is used to do. Dignity, such a dignity that you treat him with, so he can thrive and he can show what he's good at, as you can see. It's an amazing, amazing thing, the way the Torah treats other people, as we can see. And obviously we sustain his wife and his children. Just wanted to see what was on the other side. Very important, okay, that we did about this. Okay, now go to the other side, to the right, the back. I want to show you. See where it's in... I don't know what you call it, like italicized. It's very beautiful, like a medrash. I'll show you something beautiful. Let's look at this one. It says, Hashem speaking about the Jewish people whom he acquired as servants. So this is taking it out of context, right? So now it's not just the slave, and it's talking about Hashem and us. So it says, 6 years he shall serve, which is referring to, and actually this is in the Al-Shich, and we'll see next week more, a man's active life is this world's average 60 years. So 6 compares like 60. 60 to 70 years, as we say in Tehillim, is the average lifespan. And in the 7th he shall go free, which means after 70 years he departs from this world. He then becomes free of the obligation to fulfill the mitzvahs. Now, if he came in by himself, which means if he spent his life without Torah and mitzvahs, well then unfortunately he shall go out by himself. He will leave this world without their merit. If he is married, which means if he acquires Torah and mitzvahs, then the Torah says he shall go out. The wife goes out with him, which refers to the fact that he leaves the world accompanied by all of his good deeds, as we say. And if his master has given him a wife and she bears children, so not only does he have his own Torah mitzvah, this is very beautiful, if he became great and raised students who are considered like children, but unfortunately his motives in learning and teaching were impure, then the wife and the children shall be his masters, and he shall go out by himself. But what happens if the slave says, as we said, I love my master, do you remember? He wants to stay longer, my wife and my children, which this is just, again, this is totally out of context, but just what it can mean. I occupy myself with Torah out of love for Hashem and raise disciples for the sake of heaven, and therefore I will not go out free. Then we say he will then never lose the Torah which he acquired. Even after his death, he will go from strength to strength in Olam Haba. And his master shall bring him close to Elokim, which, remember we said, like the mezuzah, what does that show? That he will merit to perceive the Shechina. He shall bring him to the door. He will enter the gate of Tzadikim, or the doorpost, even in Gan Eden. He will move from doorpost of one yeshiva to the next. And he will serve him forever at the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim. A very beautiful way of looking. You can take this, a very nice one. I wanted to show you one more thing, and then we're going to finish for today, because next time we'll do a little more. I want to show you on page 6, oh, I know everything's all complicated, the Rambam booklets that you had. Yeah, you see that one, right? The one that was the Rambam. So if you go all the way to page 6, I want to show you something. This is a beautiful, beautiful article by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. So I just want to, I can't do justice, he does it beautifully. So it's page 6 of the Rambam booklets. Yes, you have that one? The booklet that looked like, how did it start? It looked like this, yeah. See this you had this, the Rambam look? Okay, page 6, God's Nudge it's called, God's Nudge. Do you see it?
Yes.
See, no, Rona, it says God's Nudge. No, not that one. Does she have it? Here, I have it. Does she have it? Maybe she doesn't have it. Here. It's in this booklet. Here. I'll give you here. It's okay. No. Here you go. It's all good. Here we are. Okay. Good. Now, yes, this page. So it says God's Nudge. This is very, very nice because it gives, again, a context. Very interesting to understand why the Torah even deals with this when we don't have the practicalities. So Jonathan Sacks says it very beautifully. So he says, first in Yisroel, we had the Aseres HaDibros, right, as we know. And what does it say? Then in Mishpatim, we come to this halacha. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he's to serve you for 6 years. So we read this. Now go to the next. There's an obvious question. Why begin here, right? The 613 commandments. So the answer is equally obvious. The Israelites have just endured slavery in Egypt. There must be a reason why this happened. If Hashem knew it was going to happen, right? Evidently, he intended it to happen. We know that Hashem had already told Avram, right? He says, your children will be slaves in Egypt. As the sun was setting, we know the famous thing of Bris Bein Hapsarim, Avram fell into a deep sleep and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. And Hashem said, know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated there, right? It seems that this was the necessary first experience of the Israelites as a nation. Because from the very start of the human story, Hashem of freedom sought the free worship of free human beings. That's the ideal, right? But one after the other, people abused that freedom. Adam and Chava and Cain and the Mabul and the builders of the, in Bavel, right? So Hashem gave them freedom, but every time they messed up. Hashem began again. This time, not with all humanity, but with one man, one woman, as we know, Avram and Sarah, one family who would become the pioneers of freedom. But freedom is difficult. We each seek it for ourselves, but we deny it to others when their freedom conflicts with ours. So deeply is this true that within 3 generations of Avram's children, Yosef's brothers were willing to sell him into slavery, as we know in the parashas we're reading now. That did not end until Yehuda was prepared to forfeit his own freedom, that his brother Binyamin could go free. Again, so here they internalized it quite quickly, that selling to slavery is not a good thing. And what we have to make sure is that all of each and every one of us as brothers remain free. It took the collective experience of the Israelites, their deep, intimate, personal, back-breaking, bitter experience of slavery, a memory they were commanded never to forget, to turn them into a people who would no longer turn their brothers and sisters into slaves, a people capable of constructing a free society, the hardest of all achievements in the human realm. And we know that's true because we see it every time in different forms. Every society in its own form. Even our society, with the financial differences, the whatever it is, we just somehow always have to create a higher class and like a subclass. So it is no surprise that the first laws they were commanded after Sinai related to slavery. It would have been a surprise had they been about anything else. But now comes the real question. If Hashem doesn't want slavery, if he regards it as an affront to the human condition, why didn't he abolish it immediately? Why did he allow it to continue, albeit in a restricted and regulated way, as we saw, very regulated? Is it conceivable that Hashem, who can produce water from a rock, mud from heaven, and turn sea into dry land, cannot change human behavior? Are there areas where the all-powerful is, so to speak, powerless? So why didn't Hashem just remove that from us, like that need to enslave another, and say that's not part of us? Let's see. So very interesting. He brings a case. He brings from the whatever this man, this law professor, published a fascinating book called Nudge. It says, in it they address the fundamental pattern and the logic of freedom. It says, on the one hand, freedom depends on not over-legislating. It means creating space within which people have the right to choose for themselves. On the other hand, we know that people will not always make the right choices. The old model on which classical economics was based, that left to themselves people will make rational choices, we know turns out not to be true. We see it time and time again. That's the problem we have even now in Australia, you know, when we talk about the Aborigines and trying. It's so hard, and it's not their fault, but you give them too much freedom and then they don't know how to use it right, because it's not, again, because of the conditioning, whatever. It is very complicated. He says, we are deeply irrational, a discovery to which several Jewish academics made major contributions. The psychologists, whatever these people, they showed how much we are influenced by the desire to conform, even when we know that other people have it wrong. Okay, I just want to continue. Let's go. How then do you stop people doing harmful things without taking away their freedom? So we say there's different ways. Because interesting thing, in a cafeteria, for example, you can put healthy food at eye level and junk food in a more inaccessible and less noticeable place. You can subtly adjust what they call people's choice architecture. This is an interesting thing. So let's see what he says. He says, that is exactly what Hashem does in the case of slavery. He doesn't abolish it, but he so circumscribes it that he sets in motion a process that will foreseeably, even if only after many centuries, lead people to abandon it of their own accord. A Hebrew slave is to go free after 6 years. If the slave has grown so used to his condition that he wishes not to go free, then is forced to undergo a stigmatizing ceremony after having his ears pierced, which thereafter remains a visible sign of shame. Every Shabbos, slaves cannot be forced to work. All these stipulations have the effect of turning slavery from a lifelong fate into a temporary condition, and one that is perceived to be a humiliation rather than something written indelibly into the human script. Why? And this is a very important line. Because what does Hashem want? Hashem wants us to choose, right? He doesn't want to superimpose on us. He says, because people must freely choose to abolish slavery if they are to be free at all. That's how it works. It took the reign of terror as, okay, so all the different things. Let me just see. God can change nature, says Maimonides, but he chooses not to change human nature. Precisely because Yiddishkeit is built on the principle of human freedom. So he could not abolish slavery overnight, but he could change our choice architecture, or in plain words, give us a nudge, signaling that slavery is wrong, but that we must be the ones to abolish it in our own time, through our own understanding. Okay, so this is one way that he looks at it. Now, it's an interesting attitude, that in other words, that it's not an ideal, and we know it's not an ideal, and we don't have it now. But I would say that we'll see next week more, that the truth is that slavery is not ideal. But first of all, it's not really slavery. That's first of all. And as we said, there are many parts of it that actually are quite ideal, if you compare it to other systems, other society systems, however you want to call it, right? Social systems. We're going to see next week that this obviously, as we saw a little bit, is very symbolic. It's not just symbolic, but it's actually how we relate to Hashem. We are all servants of Hashem. That's what we are. And that's really what it means. And there's different types of ways that we serve Hashem. But we're going to see next week a few more mefarshim, different angles of how to look at it.